An average man cares that things are either true or false, but a warrior doesn't. An average man proceeds in a specific way with things that he knows are true, and in a different way with things that he knows are not true. If things are said to be true, he acts and believes in what he does. But if things are said to be untrue, he doesn't care to act, or he doesn't believe in what he does. A warrior, on the other hand, acts in both instances. If things are said to be true, he would act in order to do doing. If things are said to be untrue, he would still act in order to do not doing. Not doing is only for very strong warriors. There are infinite numbers of lines that join us to things. They are real lines. You can feel them. The most difficult part about the warrior's way is to realize that the world is a feeling. When one is not doing, one is feeling the world, and one feels the world through its lines. Not doing is very simple, but very difficult. It is not a matter of understanding, but of mastering it. Seeing, of course, is the final accomplishment of a man of knowledge, and seeing is attained only when one has stopped the world through the technique of not doing. Shadows are peculiar affairs. Look at the shadow of that boulder. The shadow is the boulder, and yet it isn't. To observe the boulder in order to know what the boulder is doing, but to observe its shadow is not doing. Shadows are like doors, the doors of not doing. A man of knowledge, for example, can tell the innermost feelings of men by watching their shadows. You may say that there is movement in them, or you may say that the lines of the world are shown in them, or you may say that feelings come from them. To believe that shadows are just shadows is doing. That belief is somehow stupid. Think about it this way. There is so much more to everything in the world that obviously there must be more to shadows too. After all, what makes them shadows is merely our doing. When searching for a resting place, one has to look without focusing. But in observing shadows, one has to cross the eyes and yet keep a sharp image in focus. The idea is to let one shadow be superimposed on the other by crossing the eyes. Through this process, one can ascertain a certain feeling which emanates from shadows. Dreaming is the not doing of dreams, and as you progress in your not doing, you will also progress in dreaming. The trick is not to stop looking for your hands, even if you don't believe that what you are doing has any meaning. In fact, as I told you before, a warrior doesn't need to believe, because as long as he keeps on acting without believing, he is not doing. If you tackle not doing directly, you yourself will know what to do in dreaming. During the day, shadows are the doors of not doing. But at night, since very little doing prevails in the dark, everything is a shadow. I've already told you about this when I taught you the gate of power. Everything I have taught you so far has been an aspect of not doing. A warrior applies not doing to everything in the world, and yet I can't tell you more about it than what I have said today. You must let your own body discover the power and the feeling of not doing. It is stupid for you to scorn the mysteries of the world simply because you know the doing of scorn. The only thing that is real is the being in you that is going to die. To arrive at that being is the not doing of the self. When every one of us is born, we bring with us a little ring of power. That little ring is almost immediately put to use. So every one of us is already hooked from birth, and our rings of power are joined to everyone else's. In other words, our rings of power are hooked to the doing of the world in order to make the world. For instance, our rings of power, yours and mine, are hooked right now to the doing in this room. We are making this room. Our rings of power are spinning this room into being at this very moment. A man of knowledge develops another ring of power. I would call it the ring of not doing, because it is hooked to not doing. With that ring, therefore, he can spin another world. Your difficulty is that you haven't yet developed your extra ring of power, and your body doesn't know not doing. We all have been taught to agree about doing. You don't have any idea of the power that that agreement brings with it, but fortunately, not doing is equally miraculous and powerful. There is no way to escape the doing of our world, so what a warrior does is to turn his world into his hunting ground. As a hunter, a warrior knows that the world is made to be used, so he uses every bit of it. A warrior is like a pirate that has no qualms in taking and using anything he wants, except that the warrior doesn't mind or he doesn't feel insulted when he is used and taken himself. The instant one begins to live like a warrior, one is no longer ordinary. It is meaningless to complain. What's important from this point on is the strategy of your life. You may go any place you wish, but if you do, you must assume the full responsibility for that act. A warrior lives his life strategically. When he has to act with his fellow men, a warrior follows the doing of strategy, and in that doing, there are no victories or defeats. In that doing, there are only actions. The doing of strategy entails that one is not at the mercy of people. There is something you ought to be aware of by now. I call it the cubic centimeter of chance. All of us, whether or not we are warriors, have a cubic centimeter of chance that pops out in front of our eyes from time to time. The difference between an average man and a warrior is that the warrior is aware of this, and one of his tasks is to be alert, deliberately waiting, so that when his cubic centimeter pops out, he has the necessary speed, the prowess, to pick it up. Chance, good luck, personal power, or whatever you may call it, is a peculiar state of affairs. It is like a very small stick that comes out in front of us and invites us to pluck it. Usually we are too busy or too preoccupied or just too stupid and lazy to realize that that is our cubic centimeter of luck. A warrior, on the other hand, is always alert and tight and has the spring, the gumption necessary to grab it. You maintain that your insistence on finding explanations for everything is something so deeply ingrained in you that it overrules every other consideration, that it's like a disease. There are no diseases. There is only indulging, and you indulge yourself in trying to explain everything. We both are beings who are going to die. There is no more time for what we used to do. Now you must employ all the not doing I have taught you and stop the world. People tell us from the time we are born that the world is such and such and so, and naturally, we have no choice but to see the world the way people have been telling us it is. Seeing happens only when one sneaks between the worlds, the world of ordinary people and the world of sorcerers. The real thing is when the body realizes that it can see. Only then is one capable of knowing that the world we look at every day is only a description. My intent has been to show you that. Only as a warrior can one survive the path of knowledge, because the art of a warrior is to balance the terror of being a man with the wonder of being a man. Nothing is gained by forcing an issue. If you want to survive, you must be crystal clear and deadly sure of yourself. To be sensitive is a natural condition of certain people. In the final analysis, sensitivity matters very little. What matters is that a warrior be impeccable. What matters to a warrior is arriving at the totality of oneself. It is not advisable for you to indulge in focusing your attention on past events. We may touch on them, but only in reference. You can arrive at the sorcerer's explanation by accumulating personal power. Personal power will make you slide with great ease into the sorcerer's explanation. The self-confidence of a warrior is not the self-confidence of the average man. The average man seeks certainty in the eyes of the onlooker and calls that self-confidence. The warrior seeks impeccability in his own eyes and calls that humbleness. The average man is hooked to his fellow men, while the warrior is hooked only to himself. You're after the self-confidence of the average man, when you should be after the humbleness of a warrior. The difference between the two is remarkable. Self-confidence entails knowing something for sure. Humbleness entails being impeccable in one's actions and feelings. You must push yourself beyond your limits all the time. The only possible course that a warrior has is to act consistently and without reservations. You know enough of the warrior's way to act accordingly, but your old habits and routines stand in your way. You say, you've heard that the masters of Eastern esoteric doctrines demand absolute secrecy about their teachings. Perhaps those masters are just indulging in being masters. I am not a master. I am only a warrior, so I really don't know what a master feels like. It doesn't matter what one reveals or what one keeps to oneself. Everything we do, everything we are, rests on our personal power. If we have enough of it, one word uttered to us might be sufficient to change the course of our lives. But if we don't have enough personal power, the most magnificent piece of wisdom can be revealed to us, and that revelation won't make a damn bit of difference. I'm going to utter perhaps the greatest piece of knowledge anyone can voice. Let me see what you can do with it. Do you know that at this very moment you are surrounded by eternity? And do you know that you can use that eternity if you so desire? There. Eternity is there, all around you. Do you know that you can extend yourself forever in any of the directions I have pointed to? Do you know that one moment can be eternity? This is not a riddle, it's a fact, but only if you mount that moment and use it to take the totality of yourself forever in any direction. You didn't have this knowledge before, now you do. I have revealed it to you, but it doesn't make a bit of difference because you don't have enough personal power to utilize my revelation. Yet if you did have enough personal power, my words alone would serve as the means for you to round up the totality of yourself and to get the crucial part of it out of the boundaries in which it is contained. Your body is the boundary I'm talking about. One can get out of it. We are a feeling, an awareness encased here. We are luminous beings, and for a luminous being, only personal power matters. Dreaming entails cultivating a peculiar control over one's dreams to the extent that the experiences undergone in them and those lived in one's waking hours acquire the same pragmatic valence. The sorcerer's allegation is that under the impact of dreaming, the ordinary criteria to differentiate a dream from reality becomes inoperative. The early stage of the preparatory facet called setting up dreaming consists of a deadly game that one's mind plays with itself. Some part of yourself is going to do everything it can to prevent the fulfillment of your task. As soon as the sight of your hands begins to dissolve or change into something else, you have to shift your view from your hands to any other element in the surroundings of your dream. Something in us is threatened by our activities in dreaming. Each warrior has his own way of dreaming. Each way is different. The only thing which we all have in common is that we play tricks in order to force ourselves to abandon the quest. The countermeasure is to persist in spite of all the barriers and disappointments. The sorcerer's explanation of how to select a topic for dreaming is that a warrior chooses a topic by deliberately holding an image in his mind while he shuts off his internal dialogue. If he is capable of not talking to himself for a moment and then holds the image or the thought of what he wants in dreaming, even if only for an instant, then the desired topic will come to him. If one is to succeed in anything, the success must come gently, with a great deal of effort, but with no stress or obsession. You must learn how to stop your internal dialogue at will. At the beginning of our association, I delineated another procedure, walking for long stretches without focusing the eyes on anything. My recommendation was to not look at anything directly, but by slightly crossing the eyes, to keep a peripheral view of everything that presents itself to the eyes. If one keeps one's unfocused eyes fixed at a point just above the horizon, it is possible to notice at once everything in almost the total 180-degree range in front of one's eyes. That exercise is the only way of shutting off the internal dialogue. The internal dialogue is what grounds us. The world is such and such and so only because we talk to ourselves about its being such and such and so. The passageway into the world of sorcerers opens up after the warrior has learned to shut off the internal dialogue. To change our idea of the world is the crux of sorcery, and stopping the internal dialogue is the only way to accomplish it. The rest is just padding. Nothing of what we do, with the exception of stopping the internal dialogue, can by itself change anything in us or in our idea of the world. The provision is, of course, that that change should not be deranged. Therefore, a teacher doesn't clamp down on his apprentice. That would only breed obsession and morbidity. A warrior takes his lot, whatever it may be, and accepts it in ultimate humbleness. He accepts in humbleness what he is, not as grounds for regret, but as a living challenge. The humbleness of a warrior is not the humbleness of a beggar. The warrior lowers his head to no one, but at the same time he doesn't permit anyone to lower his head to him. I know only the humbleness of a warrior, and that will never permit me to be anyone's master. Things are real only after one has learned to agree on their realness. You're afraid of me, you say, of the awesomeness of my knowledge, that there is no solace for you, no haven to go to. I represent the warrior's freedom. Solace, haven, fear, all of them are moods that you have learned without ever questioning their value. Seeing is a special capacity that one can develop, which allows one to apprehend the ultimate nature of things. The world has to conform to its description. That is, the description reflects itself. We have learned to relate ourselves to our description of the world in terms of what sorcerers call habits or intentionality. That is, the property of human consciousness whereby an object is referred to or is intended. Persist in acting like a warrior. The rest comes of itself and by itself. The rest is knowledge and power. Men of knowledge have both, and yet none of them could tell how they got to have them, except that they had kept on acting like warriors, and at a given moment everything changed. A warrior must be calm and collected, and must never lose his grip. The flaw with words is that they always force us to feel enlightened, but when we turn around to face the world, they always fail us, and we end up facing the world as we always have, without enlightenment. For this reason, a sorcerer seeks to act rather than to talk, and to this effect, he gets a new description of the world, a new description where talking is not that important, and where new acts have new reflections. We are luminous beings, and everything we are, or everything we feel, shows in our fibers. Humans have a brightness peculiar only to them. That's the only way to tell them apart from other luminous living beings. Seeing happens only when the warrior is capable of stopping the internal dialogue. A warrior starts off with the certainty that his spirit is off balance. Then, by living in full control and awareness, but without hurry or compulsion, he does his ultimate best to gain his balance. In your case, as in the case of every man, your imbalance is due to the sum total of all your actions. There is nothing in this world that a warrior cannot account for. You see, a warrior considers himself already dead, so there is nothing for him to lose. The worst has already happened to him. Therefore, he's clear and calm. Judging him by his acts or by his words, one would never suspect that he has witnessed everything. Knowledge is frightening, but if a warrior accepts the frightening nature of knowledge, he cancels out its awesomeness. Knowledge is a most peculiar affair, especially for a warrior. Knowledge for a warrior is something that comes at once, engulfs him, and passes on. I urge you to feel at ease and confident and trust your personal power. Any thought that one holds in mind in a state of silence is properly a command, since there are no other thoughts to compete with it. Feelings are the gauge that assesses the state of being of the subject you are seeing. We are dealing with that immensity out there. To turn that magnificence out there into reasonableness doesn't do anything for you. Here, surrounding us, is eternity itself. To engage in reducing it to to a manageable nonsense is petty and outright disastrous. Whenever the internal dialogue stops, the world collapses, and extraordinary facets of ourselves surface as though they had been kept heavily guarded by our words. You are like you are because you tell yourself that you are that way. You are too heavy and self-important. Let go. I'm going to begin telling you about the double, or the other. The double is the sorcerer himself, developed through his dreaming. The double is an active power to a sorcerer, but only a tale of power to you. The double is the self. That explanation should suffice, for a sorcerer who sees, the double is brighter. Don't take things so seriously. I've told you time and time again that the world is unfathomable, and so are we, and so is every being that exists in this world. It is impossible, therefore, to reason out the double. A sorcerer can double up, that's all one can say. No sorcerer knows where his double is. A sorcerer has no notion that he is in two places at once. To be aware of that would be the equivalent of facing his double, and the sorcerer that finds himself face to face with himself is a dead sorcerer. That is the rule. That is the way power has set things up. No one knows why. By the time a warrior has conquered dreaming and seeing and has developed a double, he must have also succeeded in erasing personal history, self-importance, and routines. So doing is the means for removing the impracticality of having a double in the ordinary world. By making the self and the world fluid, and by placing them outside the bounds of prediction. A fluid warrior can no longer make the world chronological, and for him, the world and himself are no longer objects. He is a luminous being existing in a luminous world. The double is a simple affair for a sorcerer, because he knows what he's doing. A sorcerer may certainly notice afterwards that he has been in two places at once, but that is only bookkeeping and has no bearing on the fact that while he's acting, he has no notion of his duality. Think of this. The world doesn't yield to us directly. The description of the world stands in between. So properly speaking, we are always one step removed, and our experience of the world is always a recollection of the experience. We are perennially recollecting the instant that has just happened, just passed. We recollect, recollect, recollect. If our entire experience of the world is recollection, then it's not so outlandish to conclude that a sorcerer can be in two places at once. This is not the case from the point of view of his own perception, because in order to experience the world, a sorcerer, like every other man, has to recollect the act he has just performed, the event he has just witnessed, the experience he has just lived. In his awareness, there is only a single recollection. The sorcerer, however, recollects two separate single instances, because the glue of the description of time is no longer binding him. We're always one jump behind. Does the double have corporealness? Certainly. Solidity, corporealness, are memories. Therefore, like everything else we feel about the world, they are memories we accumulate, memories of the description. The only way to counteract the devastating effect of the sorcerer's world is to laugh at it. It's your duty to put your mind at ease. Warriors do not win victories by beating their heads against walls, but by overtaking the walls. Warriors jump over the walls. They don't demolish them. There are three kinds of bad habits which we use over and over when confronted with unusual life situations. First, we may disregard what's happening or has happened and feel as if it had never occurred. That one is the biggest way. Second, we may accept everything at its face value and feel as if we know what's going on. That's the pious man's way. Third, we may become obsessed with an event because either we cannot disregard it or we cannot accept it wholeheartedly. That's the fool's way. There is a fourth, the correct one, the warrior's way. A warrior acts as if nothing has ever happened because he doesn't believe in anything. Yet he accepts everything at its face value. He accepts without accepting and disregards without disregarding. He never feels as if he knows, neither does he feel as if nothing had ever happened. He acts as if he is in control, even though he might be shaking in his boots. To act in such a manner dissipates obsession. You must cultivate the feeling that a warrior needs nothing. You have everything needed for the extravagant journey that is your life. I have tried to teach you that the real experience is to be a man, and that what counts is being alive. Life is the little detour that we are taking now. Life in itself is sufficient, self-explanatory, and complete. A warrior understands this and lives accordingly. Therefore, one may say without being presumptuous that the experience of experiences is being a warrior. If a warrior needs solace, he simply chooses anyone and expresses to that person every detail of his turmoil. After all, the warrior is not seeking to be understood or helped. By talking, he's merely relieving himself of his pressure. That is, provided that the warrior is given to talking. If he's not, he tells no one. You indulge. You feel that indulging in doubts and tribulations is a sign of a sensitive man. Well, the truth of the matter is that you're the furthest thing from being sensitive. So why pretend? I've told you, a warrior accepts in humbleness what he is. We confuse ourselves deliberately. All of us are aware of our doings. Your puny reason deliberately makes itself into the monster it fancies itself to be. It's too little for such a big mold, though. No one develops a double. That's only a way of talking about it. All of us luminous beings have a double. All of us. A warrior learns to be aware of it, that's all. There are seemingly insurmountable barriers protecting that awareness. But that's expected. Those barriers are what makes arriving at that awareness such a unique challenge. You are afraid of it because you're thinking that the double is what the word says, a double or another you. I chose those words in order to describe it. The double is oneself and cannot be faced in any other way. The double is not a matter of personal choice. Neither is it a matter of personal choice who is selected to learn the sorcerer's knowledge that leads to that awareness. Have you ever asked yourself, why you in particular? I don't mean that you should ask it as a question that begs an answer, but in the sense of a warrior's pondering on his great fortune, the fortune of having found a challenge. To make it into an ordinary question is the device of a conceited ordinary man who wants to be either admired or pitied for it. I have no interest in that kind of question because there is no way of answering it. The decision of picking you was a design of power. No one can discern the designs of power. Now that you've been selected, there is nothing that you can do to stop the fulfillment of that design. A warrior is in the hands of power, and his only freedom is to choose an impeccable life. You're in a terrible spot. It's too late for you to retreat, but too soon to act. All you can do is witness. For you, there is only witnessing acts of power and listening to tales, tales of power. The double is one of those tales. You know that, and that's why your reason is so taken by it. You're beating your head against the wall if you pretend to understand. All that I can say about it, by way of explanation, is that the double, although it is arrived at through dreaming, is as real as it can be. It is the self. It is the awareness of our state as luminous beings. It can do anything, and yet it chooses to be unobtrusive and gentle. A man of knowledge cannot possibly act towards his fellow men in injurious terms. A warrior is always ready for anything. To be a warrior is not a simple matter of wishing to be one. It is rather an endless struggle that will go on to the very last moment of our lives. Nobody is born a warrior in exactly the same way that nobody is born a reasonable being. We make ourselves into one or the other. Jog on this spot, facing the west. The idea is to draw power from the impending twilight by raising one's arms to the sky with the fingers stretched like a fan, and then clasp them forcefully when the arms are in the midpoint between the horizon and the zenith. I'm going to tell you about the dreamer and the dreamed. The double begins in dreaming. The double is a dream. I am referring to the first emergence of the awareness that we are luminous beings. Each one of us is different, and thus the details of our struggles are different. The steps that we follow to arrive at the double are the same, though, especially the beginning steps, which are muddled and uncertain. A dream in which one is watching oneself asleep is the time of the double. Rather than wasting power in wondering and asking questions, one should use the opportunity to act. When you have the chance, you should be prepared. A warrior never lets his guard down. What matters is what can you use as a shield? A warrior must use everything available to him to close his mortal gap once it opens. So it's of no importance that you really don't like to be suspicious or ask questions. That's your only shield now. There is no flaw in the warrior's way. Question without fear, without suspicion, and without draining yourself. Assemble what you learn, without presumptuousness and without piousness. The self dreams the double. Once it has learned to dream the double, the self arrives at this weird crossroad, and a moment comes when one realizes that it is the double who dreams the self. Your double is dreaming you. No one knows how it happens. We only know that it does happen. That's the mystery of us as luminous beings. You can awaken in either one. Storing sufficient personal power will enable you to turn your will into a functioning unit. As I've said, will is a force that emanates from the umbilical region through an unseen opening below the navel, an opening called the gap. Will is cultivated only by sorcerers and gives them the capacity to perform extraordinary acts. The will develops in a warrior in spite of every opposition of the reason. You are the one who's learning, therefore you yourself must claim knowledge as power. You must find out whether or not your will works. You must prove to yourself that you are in the position to claim knowledge as power. In other words, you yourself have to be convinced that you can exercise your will. The body must be perfection before the will is a functioning unit. You feel irked with yourself because you're so helpless, you say. There's nothing wrong with the feeling of being helpless, but to indulge in protesting and complaining is another matter. What exactly is an ally? There is no way of saying, just as there is no way of saying what exactly a tree is. Just like in the case of a tree, the only way to know what an ally is by experiencing it. Your reason cannot accept the possibility of such a thing to begin with. Fortunately, it is not the reason which puts ally together. It is the body. An ally is perceivable in many degrees. Each of those perceptions is stored in one's body. The sum of those pieces is the ally. I don't know any other way of describing it. Our reason is petty, and it is always at odds with our body. This, of course, is only a way of talking. But the triumph of a man of knowledge is that he has joined the two together. The ally is waiting for you, that's for sure. It is right here, or there, or in any other place. The ally is waiting for you, just like death is waiting for you, everywhere and nowhere. It's waiting for the same reason that death waits for you, because you were born. There is no possibility of explaining at this point what is meant by that. You must first experience the ally. You must perceive it in its full force. The way one understands the ally is a personal matter. There's no need to be confused. Confusion is a mood one enters into, but one can also get out of it. At this point, there is no way of clarifying anything. Later, we'll consider these matters in detail. It's up to your personal power, so work for impeccability. I've told you that the true art of a warrior is to balance terror and wonder. Power can be met only with power. The crux of sorcery is the internal dialogue. This is the key to everything. When a warrior learns to stop it, everything becomes possible. The most far-fetched schemes become attainable. We are a feeling, and what we call our body is a cluster of luminous fibers that have awareness. As long as you think that you are a solid body, you cannot conceive of what I'm talking about. Warriors keep controlled and aloof. They don't believe anything, but still act efficiently. We are luminous beings. We are perceivers. We are an awareness. We are not objects. We have no solidity. We are boundless. The world of objects and solidity is a way of making our passage on Earth convenient. It is only a description that was created to help us. We, or rather our reason, forget that description is only a description, and thus we entrap the totality of ourselves in a vicious circle, from which we rarely emerge in our lifetime. We are perceivers. The world that we perceive, though, was created by a description that was told to us since the moment we were born. We, the luminous beings, are born with two rings of power. But we use only one to create the world. That ring, which is hooked very soon after we are born, is reason, and its companion is talking. Between the two, they concoct and maintain the world. So, in essence, the world that your reason wants to sustain is the world created by a description and its dogmatic and inviolable rules, which the reason learns to accept and defend. The secret of the luminous beings is that they have another ring of power, which is never used, the will. The trick of the sorcerer is the same trick of the average man. Both have a description. One, the average man, upholds it with his reason. The other, the sorcerer, upholds it with his will. Both descriptions have their rules, and the rules are perceivable. But the advantage of the sorcerer is that will is more engulfing than reason. You must learn to let yourself perceive whether the description is upheld by your reason or by your will. That is the only way for you to use your daily world as a challenge and a vehicle to accumulate enough personal power in order to get to the totality of yourself. Never dwell on past events except in reference. To emphasize them would mean to take away from the importance of what's taking place now. A warrior cannot possibly afford to do that. Only as a warrior can one withstand the path of knowledge. A warrior cannot complain about or regret anything. His life is an endless challenge, and challenges cannot possibly be good or bad. Challenges are simply challenges. As is always the case in the doings and not doings of warriors, personal power is the only thing that matters. The basic difference between an ordinary man and a warrior is that a warrior takes everything as a challenge, while an ordinary man takes everything either as a blessing or as a curse. A warrior must be fluid and must shift harmoniously with the world around him. Whether it is the world of reason or the world of will, the most dangerous aspect of that shifting comes forth every time the warrior finds that the world is neither one nor the other. I was told that the only way to succeed in that crucial shifting was by proceeding in one's actions as if one believed. In other words, the secret of a warrior is that he believes without believing. But obviously a warrior cannot just say he believes and let it go at that. That would be too easy. To just believe would exonerate him from examining his situation. A warrior, whenever he has to involve himself with believing, does it as a choice, as an expression of his innermost predilection. A warrior doesn't believe. A warrior has to believe. It is not so difficult to let the spirit of man flow and take over. To sustain it, however, is something that only a warrior can do. Having to believe means that you accept the facts of something, consider all possibilities and possible outcomes, and then choose to believe in accordance with your innermost predilection. Believing is a cinch. Having to believe is something else. If you have to believe, you must use all of an event, account for all possibilities, and consider everything. Before deciding that you believe one way, you must consider that it may well be another way. A warrior, or any man for that matter, cannot possibly wish he were somewhere else. A warrior because he lives by challenge, an ordinary man because he doesn't know where his death is going to find him. Death is the indispensable ingredient in having to believe. Without the awareness of death, everything is ordinary, trivial. It is only because death is stalking us that the world is an unfathomable mystery. Without an awareness of the presence of our death, there is no power, no mystery. Having to believe that the world is mysterious and unfathomable is the expression of a warrior's innermost predilection. Without it, he has nothing. You are aware of everything only when you think you should be. The condition of a warrior, however, is to be aware of everything at all times. Now it's time to talk about the totality of oneself. Some of the things I'm going to point out to you will probably never be clear. They're not supposed to be clear anyway. So don't be embarrassed or discouraged. All of us are dumb creatures when we join the world of sorcery, and to join it doesn't in any sense ensure us that we will change. Some of us remain dumb until the very end. What I'm about to say is meant only to point out a direction. I'm going to tell you about the Tonal and the Nahual. Every human being has two sides, two separate entities, two counterpoint parts, which become operative at the moment of birth. One is called the Tonal, the other the Nahual. The Tonal is a social person. The Tonal is, rightfully so, a protector, a guardian. A guardian that most of the time turns into a guard. The Tonal is the organizer of the world. Perhaps the best way of describing its monumental work is to say that on its shoulders rests the task of setting the chaos of the world in order. It is not far-fetched to maintain, as sorcerers do, that everything we know and do as men is the work of the Tonal. At this moment, for instance, what is engaged in trying to make sense out of our conversation is your Tonal. Without it, there would be only weird sounds and grimaces, and you wouldn't understand a thing of what I'm saying. I would say, then, that the Tonal is a guardian that protects something priceless, our very being. Therefore, an inherent quality of the Tonal is to be cagey and jealous of its doings. And since its doings are by far the most important part of our lives, it is no wonder that it eventually changes in every one of us from a guardian into a guard. A guardian is broad-minded and understanding. A guard, on the other hand, is a vigilante, narrow-minded and most of the time despotic. I say, then, that the Tonal in all of us has been changed into a petty and despotic guard when it should be a broad-minded guardian. The Tonal is everything we are. Everything we have a word for is the Tonal. Since the Tonal is its own doings, everything obviously has to fall under its domain. Remember, I've said that there is no world at large, but only a description of the world, which we have learned to visualize and take for granted. The Tonal is everything we know. I think this in itself is enough reason for the Tonal to be such an overpowering affair. The Tonal is everything we know, and that includes not only us as persons, but everything in our world. It can be said that the Tonal is everything that meets the eye. We begin to groom it at the moment of birth. The moment we take the first gasp of air, we also breathe in power for the Tonal. So, it is proper to say that the Tonal of a human being is intimately tied to his birth. You must remember this point. It is of great importance in understanding all this. The Tonal begins at birth and ends at death. The Tonal is what makes the world. However, the Tonal makes the world only in a manner of speaking. It cannot create or change anything, and yet it makes the world, because its function is to judge and assess and witness. I say that the Tonal makes the world because it witnesses and assesses it according to Tonal rules. In a very strange manner, the Tonal is a creator that doesn't create a thing. In other words, the Tonal makes up the rules by which it apprehends the world. So in a manner of speaking, it creates the world. The Tonal is like the top of a table, an island. And on this island we have everything. This island is, in fact, the world. There is a personal Tonal for every one of us, and there is a collective one for all of us at any given time, which we can call the Tonal of the times. It's like the rows of a table in a restaurant. Every table has the same configuration. Certain items are present on all of them. They are, however, individually different from each other. Some tables are more crowded than others. They have different food on them, different plates, different atmosphere. Yet we have to admit that all the tables are very alike. The same thing happens with the Tonal. We can say that the Tonal of the times is what makes us alike, in the same way it makes all of the tables in a restaurant alike. Each table separately, nevertheless, is an individual case, just like the personal Tonal of each of us. But the important factor to keep in mind is that everything we know about ourselves and about our world is on the island of the Tonal. What, then, is the Nawal? The Nawal is the part of us which we do not deal with at all. The Nawal is the part of us for which there is no description, no words, no names, no feelings, no knowledge. It is not mind, it is not soul, it is not the thoughts of men, it is not a state of grace or heaven or pure intellect, or psyche or energy or vital force or immortality, or life principle, or the Supreme Being, the Almighty, God. All of these are items on the island of the Tonal. The Tonal is, as I've already said, everything we think the world is composed of, including God, of course. God has no more importance other than being a part of the Tonal of our time. The Nawal is at the service of the warrior. It can be witnessed, but it cannot be talked about. The Nawal is there, surrounding the island of the Tonal, there where power hovers. We sense from the moment we are born that there are two parts to us. At the time of birth and for a while after, we are all Nawal. We sense, then, that in order to function, we need a counterpart to what we have. The Tonal is missing, and that gives us, from the very beginning, a feeling of incompleteness. then the tonal starts to develop and it becomes utterly important to our functioning, so important that it opaques the shine of the nawal, it overwhelms it. From the moment we become all tonal, we do nothing else but to increment that old feeling of incompleteness which accompanies us from the moment of our birth and which tells us constantly that there is another part to give us completeness. From the moment we become all tonal, we begin making pairs. We sense our two sides, but we always represent them with items of the tonal. We say that the two parts of us are the soul and the body, or mind and matter, or good and evil, God and Satan. We never realize, however, that we are merely pairing items on the island, very much like pairing coffee and tea. I tell you, we are weird animals. We get carried away, and in our madness, we believe ourselves to be making perfect sense. What can one specifically find in that area beyond the island? There is no way of answering. If I would say nothing, I would only make the nawal part of the tonal. All I can say is that there, beyond the island, one finds the nawal. But then you say, when I call it the nawal, aren't I also placing it on the island? No, I named it only because I wanted to make you aware of it. I have named the tonal and the nawal as a true pair. That is all I have done. We sense that there is another side to us. But when we try to pin down that other side, the tonal gets hold of the baton, and as a director, it is quite petty and jealous. It dazzles us with its cunningness and forces us to obliterate the slightest inkling of the other part of the true pair, the nawal. The nawal has consciousness. It is aware of everything. In order to talk about it, we must borrow from the island of the tonal. Therefore, it is more convenient not to explain it, but to simply recount its effects.